from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. Here in L.A., the last evacuation orders caused by this weekend's Saddle Ridge fire have been lifted, that as the blaze reached about 50% containment. The wildfire scorched 8,000 acres in the North San Fernando Valley and forced about 100,000 people to leave their homes. Over 20 structures were destroyed by the wind-driven flames, including 16 single-family homes and two apartments. A 54-year-old man died of a heart attack while trying to save his house by fighting the flames with a garden hose. Three firefighters suffered minor injuries. East of L.A., the Sandalwood Fire in the community of Cala Mesa is 100% contained. It's blamed for two deaths and the loss of 76 structures, many mobile homes. I mentioned evacuations earlier. Fire experts estimate about 10% of people ignore evacuation orders, and another 25% wait around to see how bad the fire is before leaving. KPCC's Sharon McNary has a story of one woman in that wait-and-see group.
Porter Ranch resident Lindley Margulis was slow to leave her home on Edelston Drive in the early hours of the Saddle Ridge fire.
Oh, God, that sends chills. Makes me cry.
At first, she wasn't sure the police wanted her portion of the street to leave.
We heard a little bit of the speakers saying mandatory, but it was further away.
Her husband said,
"The winds have died a little bit, so let's just wait it out." I put the cat in the carrier. Within 15 minutes, he said, "It's time to go." "Why?" We went out the front door. "Oh, I didn't realize the fire was behind us. There." You know, I could see it. I could feel the flames.
By then, the road was clogged and smoky.
All up and down Reseda was flame. So it was pretty crowded with all the news channels and the fire people and us trying to get out. So you couldn't just zoom on out. I felt the heat on the side of my door as I was trying to leave. We were in two cars. I couldn't find my husband. For the moment, you thought, well, can I get down this hill or not? But we had animals in our car, and we're going to protect them, you know, no matter what. I had faith I'd get off the hill, just slowly.
Next time, she says she'll get out sooner.
Again, that was Sharon McNary. When wildfires do erupt, we depend on highly trained firefighters to put them out. Women and men often working in dangerous and grueling conditions. Just before this weekend's fire started, KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb spent time with firefighters from the U.S. Forest Service as they trained. Here's his report.
Rush Fire Area 10. Location will be Little Tonga Canyon Road, just north of Little Tonga Station.
Up a dusty road in rural L.A. County, at the top of the San Fernando Valley, a brush fire is burning on a ranch hillside.
Did you hear that, Oscar?
Oscar, copy. Rescue 98, digit 24, digit 481, Life Force 89, Life Force 87.
Everybody cool me?
I'll bring you back.
Okay, so I was about to do some brush clearance with the U.S. Forest Service, and I just got a call of a brush fire north of their station, Little Tonga Canyon Road. So we're driving right now to the scene of that brush fire and gonna check it out and see how it's going. Now I'm following the Forest Service up the canyon. Let me get my AC on, it's really hot here.
Watch the footing!
It's deep.
Hey, let's only get like three people down there to make it to the bottom.
Once he's gonna get to the bottom,
there is farm equipment everywhere, tractors, trucks, horses too, and several dozen firefighters with the U.S. Forest Service laying hose, digging up coals, and smothering this fire before it can make headlines.
That doesn't look like water, is it?
That's foam, actually.
Today was supposed to be a day of training here in the Angeles National Forest, a 700,000-acre mountain and wilderness area that dissects L.A. County. But U.S. Forest firefighter Matthew Hawkins says he rarely knows what his day will look like.
That's how it is every day. We plan for one thing, and then in the spur of the moment, get a call, and we have to change up our plans just like that, in the blink of an eye.
Since the year 2000, there have been nearly 600,000 fires in the Angeles National Forest, something that lead officer Oscar Vargas says forces his team to be constantly prepared for fire.
We have more fires at a year-round period. Now we're seeing fire seasons extending before summer, after summer, sometimes year-round. It really depends on the climate and weather.
When the fires get big, they get names. The Camp Fire, the Thomas Fire, the Woolsey Fire. But this one doesn't. It only burned about an acre, and yet it takes all day to put out. Most fires in this forest are small, but fighting them keeps this crew prepared for the really big ones. For the California Reports, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb in the Angeles National Forest.
Sometimes something not happening is news, like this. Because of a cooling trend in temperatures and the dying down of winds, Pacific Gas and Electric says no blackouts are planned for this week in its vast service area. But lots of PG&E customers are still pretty furious about last week's power outages, and questions about the utility's blackouts are mounting. As we follow the shutoffs and their aftermath, we're also monitoring a number of other PG&E developments. My California Report co-host Lily Jamali has the roundup. Lily, what do we miss?
Hi, Saul. Well, probably the biggest thing we should note is that a week from today is the last day to bring a legal claim if you're a victim of a fire allegedly caused by PG&E. The bar date, as it's known in bankruptcy parlance, is on October 21st. So that's first. Meanwhile, Friday, PG&E responded to San Francisco, which wants to buy out PG&E's grid on its territory. PG&E said no thanks, saying, among other reasons, that this would end up costing remaining PG&E customers more. Now, if you were affected by the blackouts last week, you might have asked, who in the government is overseeing PG&E? Its state regulator is the California Public Utilities Commission, and last week, it heard arguments on whether ratepayers should foot a chunk of the bill for a $21 billion fund set up by lawmakers this summer. Now, that fund was started for victims of future fires caused by state utilities, but a past fire victim, Tubbs Fire survivor Will Abrams, told the CPUC Thursday that the fund places an unfair burden on ratepayers.
This fund artificially upgrades the utility's credit rating while downgrading ours. We will pay higher insurance rates, higher energy rates, and have an overall higher cost of living because of this fund.
Finally, we here at KQED on Friday sifted through PG&E's postmortem report to its regulator on another shutoff that happened in late September. We compared it with our own reporting on the ground, and there are some discrepancies. Take a look. I've posted my findings on Twitter. I'm at Lily Jamali. Saul?
Thanks, Lily. That's the California Report's Lily Jamali. Last week's blackouts were annoying to many and frightening to some, especially if they had health problems or were elderly. But many people were just bored and unable to do their work with the power off. In Red Bluff in Tehama County, Jefferson Public Radio's April Ehrlich came across some farm workers who lost time and money because of the blackouts.
On a patch of lawn at the Tehama County Fairgrounds, there's an intense game of volleyball going on. About 200 seasonal farm workers from Mexico bunk down here for about 2 months. Javier Martinez says they've been working at a nearby commercial nursery.
¿Cómo se dice lo que estamos haciendo?
Trimming plants.
But he lost 2 whole days of work because they couldn't pick strawberries without running water, and the pumps need electricity to run. His co-worker, Jose Hernandez, says the blackouts cost each worker about $300 over 2 days.
$300 is a lot, and we are losing that because we don't have electricity and we cannot work. This is the problem.
So instead, Hernandez and his co-workers found other ways to pass time.
We are playing football and basketball and cards. Usually we use the phones to play or to see videos, and we cannot right now.
The other problem? The men are living in a massive warehouse and sleeping on bunk beds. Right now it's pitch black because of the outages, but it's perfect for pranks.
Everybody's joking inside. Some others are scaring others.
Martinez says he's not afraid of the dark. He just wants to get back to work so he can charge his phone, talk to his brothers and parents, and make money to send back home to Michoacan. For the California Report, I'm April Ehrlich in Red Bluff.
With a legislative deadline clock ticking, Governor Gavin Newsom spent the weekend signing bills into law. They range from a new law preventing public schools from starting classes before 8 a.m. to a ban on animals performing in circus acts in the state. Newsom also signed a bill into law making California the first state in the country requiring public universities to provide the abortion pill to students. KQED's health correspondent April Nimboski reports.
When the law takes effect in 2023, any UC or Cal State student will be able to go to their campus health center for a medication abortion. Student activist Adiba Khan says women's groups raised $10 million to cover the startup costs. At a time when several states are trying to cut abortion rights, she says it's important that others push to expand access.
I'm originally from Oklahoma, and so I know what it's like to grow up in a really restrictive state. So California is lucky that this can be our fight, that this can happen.
Governor Jerry Brown vetoed the same bill last year. At the time, then-candidate for Governor Gavin Newsom said he would have signed it.
I am very happy that he followed through on his word.
Opponents called the governor's decision infuriating and outrageous. They said he was forcing California's colleges into the abortion business, and they vowed to challenge the law in court. For the California Report, I'm April Dimboski.
And finally, news from the tech industry. Menlo Park-based Facebook has big plans to create its own cryptocurrency called Libra. Here's a video the company made when it unveiled the idea.
What if everyone was invited to the global economy with access to the same financial opportunities?
But Libra is off to a very rocky start. Partners in the virtual currency, like MasterCard, Visa, and PayPal, abandoned it in recent days because of regulatory concerns that it could disrupt the global financial system and be used as a money laundering tool. Remaining backers of Libra are meeting in Switzerland today to discuss what to do next. And that's the California Report for Monday, October 14th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. Have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Strauss Family Creamery, producing 100% organic milk in reusable glass bottles for more than 25 years, keeping 500,000 pounds of milk containers out of landfills every year. StraussFamilyCreamery.com. Energy Upgrade California, urging Californians to keep it golden by saving energy through simple acts like unplugging unused devices. EnergyUpgradeCalifornia.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.